This session is from the 2024 Shepherd's 360 Church Leaders Conference. For more information, please visit shepherds360.org.
All right, good morning. We're going to get up and started. Now, how many here are morning people? Let me see your hand, please. Okay, you're alive, well, you're feeling good. How many believe it ought to be legal to shoot those people? Let me see your hand, right? And doesn't God have a sense of... Yeah, you're married, right? God has a sense of humor. He lets a night owl marry a morning person. It just kind of keeps things exciting. I firmly believe in the power of the Holy Spirit. But how many believe a little caffeine to get them going never hurt anybody, right? Kind of like a diesel motor. We're going to fire a little ether into it and get it ready to go. So thank you for coming to the morning workshop. And by just way of mini commercial, you won't want to come back. But if any of your friends missed this, it is repeated this afternoon as well. And we're kind of talking about sort of a major area that's impacting ministry, probably even bigger than when we were dealing with COVID and all of that in the online world. And it has really changed rather dramatically. So let me just kind of begin. I'm an old Duke Law grad and been practicing law now 31 years. And for those of you that...
I apologize for being from Duke.
Okay, brother. It's all right. You know, and the church discipline for you is this weekend. Just to let you know, we'll work on it. No, we're playing. But with all this, when I first started practicing law, okay, pastors, ministry leaders would come to me, and they would really ask two questions. And these are broad questions, but I'll kind of begin with, as a young lawyer, obviously one of the questions was, is it legal? Okay, like I want to start a school. I'm in North Carolina. What do I got to do? What's the law, Mr. Gibbs? And that was a good question to ask a lawyer, right? Is it legal? Because we don't want to intentionally break the law. We want to try to obey what is laid down by our government. And then a second question would get asked. And the question was, you know, is this effective? Now that sometimes is legal, but it also had a little bit of a practical kind of a ministry, coaching, consulting side to it. Like, are other pastors finding this working? Is this ministry working well in big cities? Is it working well in the country? You know, because churches are like people. How many figured out they're all a little different? And so there was always the, is it legal? Is it effective? Okay, those were kind of the standard realms of questions. But then in today's world, we now have a brand new one. And this one is probably more dramatically impacting your ministry than you may realize. And the third question is, what are the optics? What are the perceptions? How will we be perceived? Okay? So legally, you're legal, right? You have the constitutional right to worship, to minister, to do what you're called to do. Very unlikely that the government's going to come in and shut down your church. Very unlikely, okay? You guys are at conferences like Shepherd's. You're learning, you're growing. Pretty unlikely that you're going to run your church so bad that you're going to run it in the ground. You can do dumb. How many have done dumb in your life? Can I see your hand, please? And by the way, how many are glad everybody doesn't know all the dumb you've done? Okay, me too, right? Okay. But for the most part, I mean, you've kind of got it figured out, the preaching, the worship, the coordination. So you're basically operating. Some of you have been operating even for hundreds of years with the church having been there a long time. But an optics attack, a media attack, an online attack could literally, in a weekend, take out your church. And so when we talk about landmines, you know, that's kind of a graphic image, but it's entirely possible to blow your church up with one sermon, with one media twist, with one item, and all of a sudden your whole world can change dramatically. And so I want you to understand that in stewardship, this is one of the most important things you can do on two fronts, okay? So let's talk about stewardship in risk management. We don't want to be in trouble. We don't want to hurt the church. We don't want to destroy the church. We want to maximize our ministry. We want to minimize liability. So you've got that side. But then you have another side, which is you have an asset. If we talk about financial assets, money, how many understand churches are pretty careful? They've got budgets, they've got committees. Can some teenager in your church write a church check? And you'd be like, no. We're not going to let him. I mean, bless God, you got to be like 80 years old before you write a church check. And that's with three signatures, and that's with protocol, and that's with committee, and this is God's money. And by the way, I joke, but we want to be careful, right? We want to have stewardship. We want to make sure the money gets spent correctly. But let me use a new term, digital assets. How careful are we with what we don't have in a bank account, but we have on Facebook, we have on a website, we have on Instagram, we have, and every church in today's world has some degree of digital assets. Now, the fact that you're in here probably means you're thinking about it. So you guys probably do have digital assets. There are some churches that are deliberately offline. They don't have any website or anything of that. And so they probably have less to worry about in this world, but they can still have the risk management because their name, you know, you Google this church, if it's all hateful reviews, all bad stuff, all this is a cult, these are crazy people, they were mean to me, they abused me, they hurt me, your reputation can be ruined even if you have no digital assets. But how many understand in stewardship, managing the digital assets? Now, if you say to a typical pastor, who's managing? What is the plan? What do we have in terms of digital assets? It's oftentimes a cobbled together group of people that were willing to do it and sort of knew what they were doing. Okay, so this kid in college, this teenager, this guy over here, he kind of knew websites. And here's where the churches are getting caught. How many figured out some of these people you relied on end up not being all that reliable? Okay, so now all of a sudden, your Facebook, and I mean, I get this phone call. They call my office all mad. Hey, we had Facebook. We got 200 of our church members on this page, and it was all set up, and we all talked, and we all fellowshipped, and we all promoted the church. But now the guy that's running it doesn't like us anymore. And he just took it. And he's over at this other church. And he's talking to all our people about how we're a cult and we're crazy and how this other church is great and I can't preach my way out of a paper bag. And Mr. Gibbs, this is upsetting me. I want to sue this guy. And you begin with some simple questions like, well, who owns the Facebook page? Well, I don't know. He set it up. How many understand? A lot of times the person that set it up owns it. They put it in their own name. And you basically, as the pastor, you as the church, allow this individual to use your church name, your church goodwill, your church constituency to build his own personal little website or Facebook group or whatever. And by the way, that worked when he was your friend. But how many believe it would be kind of like the church treasurer when they get mad and leave? They take all the church money with them. How many believe that's not the smartest way to manage an asset, right? You'd be like, no. Nobody's taking property. Nobody's taking cash. Nobody's walking out the door with our stuff. So let me begin with, you now need to think about digital assets. What do we as a church own? And it could be minimal. It could be just a website. It could be huge. You could have a whole media library. You could have a whole online presence. Your church could be making money as an influencer. I don't know. But where are the assets? And are they owned by the church? Or are they held in the name of other people? Now, you say, well, Mr. Gibbs, right now, everything's friendly. All my people are good. I trust them. Well, this is a perfect opportunity for you now to get an inventory of your digital assets. So begin with just even knowing what you have. I'll give you another one that comes up. Churches losing their website. All of a sudden, one day there's the church website, and we'll use shepherds, you know, shepherds.org or whatever website. All of a sudden you wake up one day and it's not shepherds anymore. Let's even go gross. Sometimes it could be a pornographic website. It could be an anti-God website. It could be a very evil website. You'd be like, whoa, what happened? Whoa, what happened to our website? Well, there was somebody who set it up years ago, and they used an email. And that email is no longer monitored, or it's in the possession of somebody who doesn't care. And all of a sudden, emails started to go out. Hey, your website's coming up for renewal. Basically, for those of you that are less web savvy, think of it like an address, a mailbox. It's just kind of a digital ID that you can route people. It's generally numbers, but we put words on it. So, you know, shepherds.org, shepherds.edu, those are the kind of things that are owned by this church, where they're able to point people to their ministry. But there'll be renewals, and you have to basically protect the mailbox. It's kind of like letting a P.O. box lapse. And those emails go off, and then all of a sudden, somebody else buys the website, claims it, captures it. You're kind of stuck. Now, if you say, well, Mr. Gibbs, we've only got 20 people. It's not that big a deal. We'll set up another website. Well, that's just a headache factor. But how many understand if you spent years or decades, if you put a church of this size, how many understand it would be a colossal headache? I'll use organizations as big as like Pensacola Christian College. They had a website that was theirs for a while. They weren't really jumping on it as quickly. And they let it lapse by mistake. And a group of grumpy students got it. How many believe that was embarrassing? So the grumpy students, and they did it kind of sarcastically, but it was not nice. I mean, you know, they kind of made fun of the administrators. They were kind of using it. So basically what Pensacola had put on their literature and promoted and put out, and, you know, and then they threatened to rain, you know, hellfire brimstone on these former students. But you know what? They had no legal recourse. You know what Pensacola ended up doing that was sort of sad but funny? They wrote a check and had to buy their own website back from the naughty students and said, look, just give it back to us, please. And the students were like, this is what we want. Pensacola said, okay. And it was worth it because they had not managed a digital asset. So I'm kind of just coming to you. If I were to say to you, can you get me a list of your real estate? You maybe don't have the deeds in your office, but you got a pretty good idea. We own the parsonage. We own this property. Here's our church campus. This is what we got. Or say, tell me about your bank accounts. Oh, we got two or three, Mr. Gibbs, missions, general. Over here, we might have an investment account if we've got some reserves. But, you know, and they're at these banks or they're held here. And if I need a list or an update, this treasurer's got it. I've got a list. If I were to say, give me a list of your digital assets, that could be a little tougher question. So maybe just starting with, what do we actually own digitally? So just a list, an inventory. Now, then once you start with the actual list, how do we control it? How many understand there are some magic things that run all of these digital assets? Passwords and emails. Yep. Okay, those are, because if you forget the password, they're gonna kick it to the email. That's kind of the way all this works, okay? And you know that with your banks, you know that with your own stuff. If you try to get in your iPhone and you forget your password, what are they going to do? Well, we'll email you. Here's a code. You can. So make sure that you as a church, and by the way, I don't think these should all be in the pastor's name, okay? But if they are in the pastor's name, there needs to be a clear understanding that all of these digital assets are owned and controlled by the church, that these are assets. So, you know, it might be in your interest to set up a, I'm making up names here, an info@mychurchgmail.com. Okay, just so you have one spot where all of these emails, all of these things are monitored and looked at. But you, this is part of thinking through the plan. Okay, so do we even know what we own? Do we have a list of what we own? And then let me add, do we control what we own? So that's kind of on the stewardship side, making sure that you've got it handled. If someone puts it in their own name, if I went to Dr. Davey and said, hey, I'm a digital guru, I'll set up this really cool TikTok and I'll do this, I'll do that. And he goes, yeah, great, go. Well, I may put all that in my own name, and as long as I'm a friend of the ministry, it works. But how many understand people come and go out of churches all the time? So even as a pastor, if somebody says, hey, I'll set this up for you, preacher, great. But here's what we need to do. We need to make sure the website, the presence, the group, whatever it is owned by the church. And the guy may go, well, I'll just set it up. No, no, no. We need to make sure it's owned by the church. Because the church is putting its name, its imprimatur. And then number two, I need to have all the passwords and control it. And we need to make it super clear, you're doing all this for the church. You don't own any of this. Well, I was kind of thinking I would set up my own little web design business for other churches, and I kind of want to own it. And well, you're learning things, right? So before you get into these relationships, make sure that it's very, very clear who owns the digital assets and do you have an inventory. And you say, David, I don't have a clue on any of that. Well, go back to your church and start working on it. And the first thing would be just create a list. Anywhere that your church is popping up online, anywhere that you're listed. And then also watch getting registered with other groups. How many understand we live in an affinity world out there? People want to identify different groups. And some of those groups are not helpful. So like if you're getting listed with, you know, pastors that want to storm the Capitol, I'm making that up, okay? But if your church is like, yeah, you want to do that, here's the church. And you may go like, I don't believe that. That's not me. How did my church get there? How many believe every church has a nutty guy? And by the way, he will never leave. I'm just telling you right now. Okay, I just get used to him. He's going to be there for a while. That young couple that are both making $100,000 a year, don't get too fond of them. They'll be gone quickly. Okay, they're going to get transferred. They're gone. Low maintenance, lots of money. But the high maintenance guy with next to no money, he's going to be the guy that's going to be like, I've got our church on all these websites, and I've got this up here, and I got this up there. And things can even start out one way and shift another way. Years ago, there were kind of tea party meetings, okay? And some of it was kind of like, we want freedom, we want liberty. It was kind of based on the Boston Tea Party. It had an idea of, you know, it's kind of going back to a traditional, it wasn't Christian, but it was kind of back to a traditional freedom America model. Well, I went to some of those as a speaker and enjoyed the events. But then I began hearing some of the other speakers. And all of a sudden, one guy's up there like, let me tell you what's going to fix America. And he put up Barack Obama's picture. And then he put up a rifle scope. And he was almost, he didn't say murder the guy. But it was pretty close to, like, we got to eliminate Obama. And once he's out, then we're going to get this. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I don't want to be here with this guy. He's nuts. Okay, he's saying kooky things. So just remember online, people could be tagging and putting your church into things that you don't feel comfortable with. So in addition to your digital inventory, you know, making sure we know what we have, think about your digital presence. Where are we and where did we get hooked up? And maybe I need to be removed from this. So that's kind of on the asset side, the stewardship side. Now let's jump over to the liability side. Okay, so we got a handle on what we got. We got a handle on how we're gonna be identified, but now what are we doing online? Let me give you some areas that end up in litigation and create trouble. Release of private information. And this one's tricky, okay? Because it can be prayer requests. It can be we have a nursery and we let you zoom in and watch. It can be everything from church services where we're putting the whole thing up online and then some guy gets up there and he starts talking about his friend at work that's not saved and is an alcoholic and all this is getting broadcast on the internet because we stream everything. And how many understand the public dissemination of otherwise private information is a legal claim. It's a tort, it's an injury, and people can sue you. There can be situations where people don't want their kids known to a violent or an ex-spouse. There can be situations where people don't want it known they're in your church. I mean, I've had judges say to me, look, I go to this very conservative biblical church, but I don't talk about it because it will create problems for me down at the courthouse. You know, it's sad that you kind of have to be in the closet, but the judge makes the decision it's better for him to stay low profile. But then all of a sudden, the pastor says, and we're so happy that Judge so-and-so's here, and it's right out on the internet, and it creates all this headache and heartache. So thinking through, what are we disseminating online? And then let's talk tied to that. Do we have the right to put it out? Okay. And the right kind of falls into two big areas, pictures and music. Okay. And there are internet trolls. So let's talk about what a troll is. They're people that try to trick you into using their stuff, and then they sue you when you use it. And how many say, that's a slimy business? Yep. And they make a lot of money. Because the internet has pictures, and you think, oh, this is in, we'll use words, public domain. This is free. Okay, so you'll think that you have the rights to use something. Then you use it. And by the way, some of them are very powerful. I'll use Thanksgiving time. There's hungry guys getting food, okay? I call it the rescue mission shots. There's attractive families. You know, it's just the perfect husband-wife, cute kid combo that just looks like, oh, wow, if they're a church, I want to go to that church. I mean, they create some very attractive visual images. And they kind of let them float around out there. And your web person will go, oh, man, we need a family photo, family ministry. Let's grab that. Oh, hey, we have an outreach. We're going to help in the community. Let's grab that. And all of a sudden, they put the photos on your website. Well, in today's world, it used to be harder. They had to kind of go look for the pictures, try to find them, and search them out. How many understand AI has made their life a lot easier? So all of a sudden, they'll do a run, and they'll say everywhere that this photo is popping up, and boom, there's your church's website. And they'll say, did this church get a license or pay for it? Answer, no, because your guy just found it somewhere and threw it up there. Well, what ends up happening is they have law firms that will send you a nice letter. The letter will be, you're in violation of copyright. We want you to immediately take down the photo. And you're like, okay, I'll take it down. That's fine. And we want you to send us a check for $35,000. Okay, and you say, well, we're not sending a check for $35,000. Well, if you don't decide to send us a check for $35,000, we're going to go to court. We're going to file here in Atlanta, Georgia, or Dallas, Texas, or New York City. It's always some big city, inconvenient for you, court. And we're going to charge you with copyright violation. And just so you're aware, per violation, and we'll need all the clicks. Please don't lose any of your records. You're like, records? I don't know if I even have records. But, you know, you understand what I'm saying. And, you know, we're entitled to up to $300,000 or $400,000 in copyright violations plus attorney's fees. And here is one dumb person that actually fought us, and here's a $500,000 judgment we collected against this business. Now, how many believe that is a slimy group of people? How do they sleep at night? It's all about the money, right? They're not worshiping God. It's yeah, big house. They're living large. And by the way, I'm a lawyer, and I don't like a lot of them. Okay, so I'm going to tell you right now. But these are internet trolls. Okay, and I get about 2 to 4 of these a week into our office. Okay, because they will go after your ministry, and here's what ends up happening. I say, I think we can fight it. But do you realize what it's going to cost you? Just even in getting in your car, or getting on a plane and going to Atlanta, going into court, you're looking at probably $10,000 just fighting it, right? Because just the headache, distraction, all that. But I think if you're willing to take it down, agree not to use it anymore, and write them a $5,000 check, they'll go away. A $3,000 check, they'll go away. And good news, they generally take the check, ka-ching, one letter, they just made $3,000. One letter, they just made $5,000. One letter, they made $10,000. I mean, it's just whatever fear factor, how much stuff you used, what the storyline is. And it has become very aggressive online with the photos and with the music, okay? I mean, you hear some of the controversies, you know, some of the campaigns use different songs and different owners of the music. Ah, it's not allowed. I didn't get permission and litigation over all this. Well, it's all based on copyright. Did you have permission to use my intellectual property? Okay. No different than if you have an automobile and you say, David, while you're in town, here's the keys. You have my permission. And I can drive your car. That would be with permission. But if you left your keys laying around, and I thought, that's a nice car. I think I'm going to hop in, and I'll use it while I'm here. How am I going to understand? That would be without permission. That would be the crime of car theft, obviously. But at the end of the day, that's exactly how they look at it. You took my stuff, and I think sometimes we think of a car, very tangible, very easy to see, very easy to think about. But you took my stuff, and you proceeded to use it without permission. And that's photos, and that is videos, that is music. So just be careful, okay? You say, we have CCLI, we're good. CCLI doesn't always cover the internet. They charge more if you want internet broadcast rights. So if you're gonna put your music up online, then think about it. Now, this is coming back to the plan. Okay, so let's talk about this. Yes, sir.
Just real quick, photos, if I use them in a sermon on illustration, you never go out online, but they pull something up and like you were speaking right now and you had a picture of KFC here or something like that. Look at this chicken place and it's not gonna go online.
You will, this is the great point, and let's talk about it, all right? Sunday school, sermons, there is a concept, okay, so let me give you the concept. That's called fair use, okay? So if I were to say, and I'm looking here, oh, here's a book, okay? If I were to say, you know, here's one of the books that I've seen, and it says the most misused verses in the Bible. Now, I didn't write this book. This is by Dr. Bergerhoff, and this is his book. He owns it. But I want to tell you, there's three things in this book that are horrible. And he may not like that, right? Because he can be like, wait, I wrote that book. It's a pretty good book. I get complete fair use to talk about something or to show it up for a non-commercial temporary purpose. Okay, now, if I were to take his book and say, pretty good book. I think I'm gonna put my name on it, I'm gonna reprint it, and I'm gonna sell it. How many believe that would be copyright theft, right? I've taken his intellectual property and I'm using it for my benefit. So you do in sermons get fair use, okay? You get the opportunity to show things or talk about things. Let me show you this New York Times article. Let me show you this article David Gibbs wrote. Let me tell you what Shepherd Seminary says about this. Completely fair. But once you start putting it out online, it gets a little trickier because they start asking questions is that fair use or is that for the commercial benefit of the church?
I'm talking about the Antichrist and I wanna say, hey, he goes by that number 666. Joe over here did a great little illustration on 666. He put it on his website. I take that, copy it, and put it up on my screen. That's it. Can I do that? Fair use.
For fair use, yes.
How about if someone in your audience takes a picture of your KFC logo that you put up there and they post it? It's not for the church. It's just they're posting it. There's a great message we heard from Pastor so-and-so today. They're taking a picture of him and his illustration, blah, blah, blah. That's okay, right?
Well, you want to be a little careful. Now,
you can't really judge what this person's going to do.
That person is violating copyright.
Not the church.
Not the church. Okay.
Could you repeat the question?
But like if somebody took a picture of your illustration with KFC, and let me go the one that who's very aggressive, because you'll see this in the church world, Disney. Disney is uber aggressive. So, like, if you, I have had churches get sued over mouses painted on the wall that looked a little too much like Mickey.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay. So, I'm letting you know that, I mean, these companies, and again, you know, here's their argument. We spend billions, collectively trillions of dollars building this brand, building this image. We want people to come to Orlando or California or around the world to come to our parks. But if you just throw it up in your church for free, you just stole our intellectual property. You're getting kids that would have otherwise gone to Disney World. Now, we don't believe this, but this is their argument. They would have gone to Disney World to see Mickey. Now they're coming to your church, so you're getting all the money. So you're exploiting our brand. You're stealing our stuff. And so I will just share with you cartoon characters, Disney illustrations, Disney movies. You know, there's a lot of aggressive protection. Somebody mentioned Marvel comic books. These different groups that have built major brands in Hollywood will aggressively protect their copyright. And fair use might be, I went to Disney and they didn't have family day. They had LGBTQ day. It was awful. I'm very disappointed. Okay, fair use. You talk about Disney, you know, Mickey Mouse, he's going to have a limp wrist before long. You can say what you want to say, right? Okay. But the minute you start using those images, putting them online, other things, you're going to run into questions whether you're exploiting inappropriately the copyright. So just watch music, watch videos. And here's maybe just a practical. Does your online world, and this is maybe coming to the plan, does your online world need to be limited and not include your whole church service? Okay, so here's a thought. When the pastor stands up, open your Bibles, or we've just read some verses. When the pastor says, bow your heads, we're going to have a closing prayer or an invitation. Okay, so is that your online presence? I mean, it's the beginning of the message. It's the end of the message. There's no announcements. There's no fooling around. There's no music. And by the way, I will say this. Without pretty good cameras, pretty good microphones, your music denigrates online.
It sounds bad.
Okay.
I'll say it sounds
bad. You said it, but you know, I mean, sometimes it's like, you know, the what's sweet in church, that one lady on the organ, you know, online, it's like almost laughable. I mean, so things can look different and be made fun of.
So, the one guy with the mic, it's just really rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and then the other issue you have with this is when you put it up online, and I'll come to you, brother, when you put it up online, you also are kind of surrendering the rights. So what I'm almost suggesting, have maybe a little sermon or a little talk on, here's our church, you know, 5-minute infomercial if you want. How do you go to heaven? Do a little soul winning. So you could have like two little videos. Last week's message, that's a good one to have up there because people may want to listen to it. Coming attractions, here's next week's message. And maybe a greatest hits. Like if you say, man, I got one sermon, man, that was good. Okay, leave it up there. You know, let people think that's every week, right? But at the end of the day, you put up all those messages and they're just up there forever. After your mother and three friends have watched them, they're just sitting there. And who's gonna look at them? The haters, people that don't like you, and also people that want to accuse you of stealing all your messages from Steve and David. The plagiarism people. They're going to go through and say, our pastor's never had an original thought. I want to show you this book, and I want to show you it. And you've just left years worth of stuff laying there for no meaningful benefit. So I might encourage you, unless, again, you have a national media ministry, and it makes sense for you, that a lot of what you're leaving online needs to come off. Yeah, but we got a YouTube that goes back 18 years. It's great. I'm just telling you. I mean, I check the views because, like, when your church gets sued or they want to attack you or they want to take a joke you told back 10 years ago that now seems not as appropriate, you have given away your ability to say, I own that. You can't use it because you put it up online. So coming back to the plan, think about what is it exactly that we're trying to put out online. Then let me give you another like plan thought, social media plan. Content is king online. And churches have a stream of content, but then managing it, getting it together, getting it up there is a lot of work, right? Just because you open up a Facebook, just because you open up an Instagram, just because you open up some other outlet, doesn't mean people are going to flock by the millions. Okay, you've got to have some way to feed this thing. And so I do encourage churches to think about possibly less is more. Like, if you do it well, what is the purpose of our Facebook? Is it just to let church members know what's going on? Well, then you should probably have a closed group and make it by invitation only. You got to get permission to get in. You say, no, it's not designed for members only. It's designed for the world at large. We want to see how cool our church is. Well, then you got to think about it more. And I will give you rule number one to all public speaking, all media, is know your audience. And I think churches sometimes think we're going to take our in-house talk and we're going to put it out to the world and they're going to see how nice we are and they're going to want to show up. And I might suggest your in-house talk is aimed at the people that are there. This seminar is aimed at y'all, right? You're sitting here as church leaders, ministry leaders, and I'm talking more bluntly. If I was on Fox News and we're having a conversation about church media outreach, my conversation might be different because it's not going to be focused on liabilities. It's going to be focused on community good and what we're accomplishing. And so think about what is our audience and do we have the ability to keep feeding it content? And then making sure that whoever controls that content is under your control, that you've got the passwords and the information and that you have the right to use it. Let's talk about two other areas. Ministry reputation obviously can be attacked online, and you have to start monitoring more aggressively your church. You say, what's the best way to get rid of that one guy that came to our church and said we're a cult and we're awful? We're never going to find that guy. He may not even exist, and we're probably never going to be able to get that knocked down. But what you could do is you could say to your 25 Sunday school class people, hey, we got a problem. Somebody put a really negative, unkind thing online. I need all of you to go into Google. Matter of fact, this Sunday, get your phones out. All right, here's how you pull up the church. Okay, do a Google search. Here's our church. Okay, see that little button up there that says add review? All right, we're going to take the next 5 minutes. I want all of you to add a nice review. Okay. Talk about the best Sunday school teacher in the world. Talk about that. You know, you can be a little facetious, but my point is you can generally get rid of the negatives by overwhelming with some positive. Okay. I have the privilege through some of the work I've done to have had some major media moments. I was the attorney for Terry Schiavo's family. So that threw me out on billions of websites simultaneously. I've done other cases, maybe not as much media, but a lot of media. So I always have a new swirl. If somebody says, I think David Gibbs is a really dumb lawyer, kind of hurts my feelings, kind of hurt, you know, sad he said that, puts it somewhere. But at the end of the day, the new just always is swirling over the top, and you're never going to really find that person. If somebody does something that's completely defamatory, now let's talk about defamatory. They lied about you. Okay. You know, I had one guy for some reason, this is a long time ago. He decided to put on the internet that I'm trying to remember, I'd gone to jail for 10 years or something. Okay. Well, that's not true. I'm an attorney. I've never been to jail. I don't have a criminal background. That's nonsense. But he put it online, and it started, at least some people were like, hey, I didn't know you were ex-con. You know, it started getting enough traction. I was getting, you know, invited to some prison events. I was like, I need to fix this. Okay. So anyway, you can generally go to ISPs, internet service providers, and say, this is not true. I will verify it's not true. Here's what, and you can generally get it taken down if it's absolutely false. So, for example, if they say Pastor X is a registered sex offender, I'm going to believe that's pretty damaging, right? People get real nervous. That's a spooky, the buzzwords. That's not true. We can get that taken down. Now, here's the problem. Opinion is protected free speech. I think the way that pastor looks at those kids is a little creepy. Now, that's also not true, but how many hear what just happened, in my opinion? I think that pastor, you know, is the type that might have an affair. Notice, they didn't say you had an affair. That might be able to get taken down. they throw out just enough to make it miserable. Okay. And you say, well, I'm going to sue the internet people. Well, bad news. Completely immunized and protected. Okay. So even if you want to go after Facebook, Google, it's in the law. Congress has put it there. The idea was to foster this big internet. So they have zero liability. So you cannot sue the people that allowed it to go up. So now you get to go sue the person. Well, number one, how many understand sometimes you can't even find these people? Okay. Or it can be a 20-year-old living in his parents' basement. And how many understand there's very little collectability? So even to the pastors that feel like they're getting maligned, okay, and they come to me and say, David, I want to go after this guy. I'm like, well, are you ready to spend money? Well, now I'm spending money to go after a kid where I'm not going to get any money. Yeah. Or do you want to work on adding positive over the top? So again, food for thought in terms of protecting the reputation. And then let's do one more, and then we'll take... Yes, sir, fire one. By the way, first question is free. Second one's very expensive. So I just want to know. Go ahead, sir.
So we have a clothing outlet. And
Wait. A clothing outlet?
We have a clothing outlet. We give away clothes for free.
Okay.
And 2 months ago, in July, 3 months ago.
Like your outfit. Very nice.
A gentleman comes. I give a speech. I talk about the gospel. Talk about how things are, which is faith alone, Christ alone. And he writes on Google reviews, during the clothing drive, Pastor Mike said Islam and other religions like Buddhism and the people that follow them are evil. And I don't remember saying that. I don't think I said that at all. And this church doesn't seek to welcome the foreigner, but to use the teaching of Jesus to push their own fear-mongering agenda. How would you respond to that?
Well, a couple things. Okay, you've already said the guy's probably not a friendly. Okay, so if you have a friendly, okay, contact them and say, hey, your review's not helping us. Would you edit it? Okay, you can always go in and you can remove a Google review. You can change a Google review. If you wrote it, you can edit it. So if you got a friendly, ask them to edit it. Just say, look, the way you said that's not being perceived the way you meant it. So
they give me one star. Could you ask them to change that too?
Well, I mean, you probably don't have a friendly, okay, is what it sounds like.
I'm sorry.
So I'm saying, like, if you have a deacon that's just a little bit, he bloviates, how many know what that word means, right? Our pastor speaks against sin, and, you know, I think gays will populate hell, and I'm so glad our pastor agrees with me, and, you know, and you're like, okay, that's a little harsh, okay? Deacon, I appreciate your heart and spirit, but you're not quite comprehending. This is not making my ministry easier. It's making it harder. Oh, I'm sorry, Pastor. I didn't mean that. Well, would you go in and edit that? So if you got a friendly, just go to him and ask him to edit it. Sounds like you got an unfriendly or at least a neutral maybe, okay? And then you've got a question there is you can actually, if it's about you or about the ministry, they will allow you to counter comment, okay? And sometimes the best way to handle that is with a pleasant counter comment. Just saying, our ministry is to all people. And again, I'm not putting words in your mouth. We love and appreciate everybody. We do preach Jesus, and we're sure glad to give away these clothes and try to be a blessing to people. I'm sorry that you perceived my message differently than I intended it. And I certainly want to let you know this is my heart and spirit. Now, is that going to keep everybody? But you can at least kind of put something out there that gives you a little... you know, something. But then I also say this, be careful that you don't lift people up to your platform. We have someone running for president that is famous for doing this, okay? Donald Trump gets mad at people. And they're people none of us ever heard of. And what he does is he denigrates them on his platform. And what happens to these people that none of us heard of? They get lifted up, and all of a sudden they're on TV when nobody even knew who they were, or they're now in the news. And Donald Trump feels like he's squashing them like a bug. I might suggest what he just did is he gave them a credibility they didn't deserve. Okay? Now, y'all aren't running for president. You're not quite on the international world media scene, but how many understand everybody has a platform? And I say this to pastors, you got one grumpy guy in the church, and you walk to the pulpit and say, you're not going to believe what somebody said to me, and I'm going to tell you. What you just did is you took a guy that has no influence, no voice, and you just put him on your platform. I mean, you might as well let him come up and talk. I mean, you're giving him a platform that he doesn't deserve. So sometimes ignoring the negative, it will fizzle out, it will fade out, it will go away, okay? So be careful. I mean, I had one situation where church was just all wound up. You know, somebody came and visited, said a few unkind things, and they're like, we gotta get this taken down, our church is gonna be over this. I was like, relax a minute, let it simmer for a month, and all of a sudden things disappear, it's gone, it's over. You know, don't, and it can even be things like, you know, there's a documentary and it's saying bad things about our church. Okay, documentaries in today's world don't have the eyeballs of the old media. So just let things play out, see what actually happens, and then target your communication. How many believe there's communication to the outside world, we want a message, but how many believe there's also communication internally? Like and let me tell you who your number one people to talk to. How many believe your donors are pretty important people? So if you say, well, in this church, there's three families, they give 80% of the money. How many believe they're worth a phone call, a dinner, an opportunity? Let me explain. I want you to know. And now all of a sudden you solidified your donors, you solidified your church, then you work on the external. And how many understand externally, some of these people you're never going to win over? I mean, the message they hate as much as anything is there's only one way to heaven. And by the way, how many believe there is only one way to heaven?
Yeah.
So that is going to internally create problems for them. Let me touch on one more thing, then we'll take questions from the floor. You got to be careful, too, with electronic communication. Now, I know this is maybe a little different than websites, a little different than digital, but I do want to talk about this because I think it's important. Is your youth pastor texting students? Are your Christian school teachers texting? How are you communicating? Are you as a pastor texting the people in your church? Okay, now, before you panic and go, oh, no, well, let me just put a few things out, okay? Electronic communication never goes away. People will not remember a conversation that you had, but they're gonna remember a text, and they're gonna keep it, and they're gonna print it, and they can post it, it's got your name on it, okay? And then people that prey on children, and again, I don't think anybody in this room is a danger to kids, but you do have people in your church that you can't always be comfortable with. Electronic communication is the number one way to groom or to get a child that would otherwise never be preyed upon vulnerable to being preyed upon for inappropriate emotional, sexual, physical, other interactions. And so thinking about from a policy standpoint, what is our policy on electronic communication? I might suggest, this is food for thought, I'm just giving you ideas, that like you have a two-worker rule in church, you don't want a man in a room alone with young girls or young boys, today's world, you have a two-worker rule, that you have kind of a two-person rule on texting, that if it's a group activity and the youth pastor wants to put out, hey, everybody be at the church at 7, we're gonna gather and do pizza fun. Okay, it's a group. If it needs to be an individual text, you copy your wife, you copy the pastor, you copy the parents, that you kind of think about electronic communication as not one-on-one back and forth a lot, but that it's groups, it's more than one, and that if there needs to be more conversation, it shouldn't be over text. How many believe counseling by text is dangerous? And I'm not talking just kids, it could be adults, right, too. I mean, all of a sudden, the lady in the church, you've been counseling her and her husband, they're having some marriage trouble, and she's like, Pastor, I just need to ask you a question or two. Well, now all of a sudden, you're texting one-on-one with, and again, I'm not saying your heart is wrong or that you're doing anything other than trying to be kind or efficient, but how many understand those texts can start creating problems? Okay, first of all, it gets this lady too connected to you, probably gets you too connected to her, and now you've created a digital record that when her husband reads it, he's gonna be mad at you too. So you're lose, okay? So be thinking about how do I manage this? Now, again, if you have kids in your family, your own children, your own spouse, those, that's your personal communication. I'm just talking about on behalf of the minister. So I'll even pastor friends. Stephen Davey, who's my dear friend, and you know him well here as the founder of this church and these ministries, he'll send me a text, and he'll be like, "Dave, we've got this situation in the church." And I will say to him, "Let me call you, or let's talk." Because how many understand, I could give a nickel dime, you know, this, that, or the other. I could just throw out little, you know, little kind of whip it out advice. But how many understand that may not be in his best interest, because I may not fully understand the situation. I don't understand really what's happening. And sometimes conversations are a lot better for fully grasping and effectively ministering. So that wife that's got all these questions and she wants to gripe you online, you may say, "Well, you know what? I think we're scheduled with your husband next week. Why don't you guys, it looks like that session will be a little longer. Why don't you come a little earlier?" And then copy your secretary, copy your wife, copy the husband on it. You follow what I'm saying? That has a way of keeping things a lot safer for you. And then it also creates a culture of protecting the kids. If the kids understand, I shouldn't be texting my youth pastor one-on-one because that's not allowed. And by the way, public schools have adopted this, lots of educational institutions, but just be careful with what is your church's policy. You say, "We don't have a policy." How many understand that's a little bit of a dangerous place to be? So you want to say, look, if we're going to have electronic communication, and this can be volunteers as well as staff, but if we're going to allow this communication, how should it be done? How should it be done appropriately? Now, I'm looking, we got 5 minutes, so I'm doing good. We've got some questions time. So yes, sir, go ahead.
Back to what you were talking about with music, I just wanted to ask, what are some common things that you've seen or repeated cases, I suppose, that involve music in churches, like problems that music can cause with churches?
Where I see most of the music cases, okay, now again, it can be just a general website, but generally speaking, there is some type of fundraiser or some type of banquet or some type of special event. I don't know why, but it just seems like those somehow catch the attention of the music licensed people. So a pastor did a building banquet. He thought they had permission for the song. And what he had, this is horrible, but he had gotten permission to play it in church, which was cheaper. He didn't get permission to play it in a banquet to raise money, which cost more. Now, that was his mistake. Well, but, I mean, in fairness, he said, "Do we have permission to use the song?" And everybody's like, "Yeah, we got it. We got license right here." Okay. So then they did the banquet. And again, not huge money, but they raised a couple hundred thousand. It was kind of an exciting time for them. Well, then they get a call from the owner of the song, and it's somebody that is here, and this is my work. You used it without permission. You raised all this money. You know, I want 50% of what you raised. You work them down. But, I mean, they ended up having to pay some money to make that person go away. So if you use music without permission, okay, even in church, you could be liable. But they don't know you've done it in church, right? Till you put it online. Now, again, I'm not recommending you do things that you get away with, but my point is, generally, unless they're sitting in church or somebody tells them, they don't know if you sang somebody's licensed song. But then when you put it online, you then make it more out there. And then when you have a fundraising event, it gets out there. So those are things to think about. Lightning round, a few more questions. Go ahead. Yes, sir.
So a couple of questions very related to that. So first off, on pictures that you take in the church, people are sitting there, take a picture of them, okay? As long as you post it within the church, if you're here, there's a chance that you're going to be online. Is that okay, first off?
Let's stop right there. Yes. You can generally put it in your bulletin or put a sign up somewhere that if you come into this building, we do take some photos, okay? And it's presumed that that's not a problem. Now, let me give you where you want to still be careful, okay? If somebody says from Shepherd's, "Man, this is a nice workshop group. We're gonna come over here, take a shot. We got everybody," and there's a group shot. Okay, and everybody goes, "Oh, that was part of the conference." But then all of a sudden if they go, "Man, Tony, the way he just looks, he is like the seminar attendee. I mean, this guy is like marketing material 101. So they come in, they zoom in on you, they take your headshot, they get the, and boom, you're now on the cover of next year's
marketing materials, and you may go, I didn't even enjoy the conference. Why did they do that? You know, I mean, so I do recommend that if you're planning to focus on a child, a family, an individual for some more deliberate purpose than other than just group shots, more that way, that you do get even the permission, even though you have to sign up. You would want to. So go ahead.
And there's also pictures, like lots of sites have pictures and it's royalty free. You search it out, it says royalty free. Are you allowed to use those? And it's okay.
The
site is advertising as royalty free. How do you track that that was royalty free when you did it? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, and let me go a step further. A lot of royalty free websites are scams. Okay. And the trollers use them. They may say royalty free, but that doesn't mean license free. That doesn't mean copyright free. And again, I'm with you. You know, there's different, and there's some decent people that put, you know, clip art and other things out there that they make available for free. They don't care. Like, I'm always easygoing. Okay, somebody says, you preach in our church. Do whatever you want with it. Put it out there, sell it. If you can make money off it, God bless you. I mean, I've always been low key. Other people aren't. I mean,
there's also music sites that do the same thing. Like, if you want bumper music for your podcast, things like that. Royalty free. You can download that music.
But you generally have to join either the website or be involved, and you have to document it. And then when you lose your membership, did you lose the rights to use it? You got to look at all. And so, if just giving you food for thought. Be careful, online isn't always what it looks like online. Yes, sir.
Links to music videos where it says, this is our playlist of music we commonly play, here are the songs, here's the link, you can go see them.
And is it the authors or the people or other people doing the music? Who are the links to, I guess, what I'm
links
saying?
Links to, like, official videos.
Yeah, if it's official videos and it's their official site, you're fine. If it's your church singing the music you didn't really have permission to, then you might just be adding to your copyright issues.
Or Sally down the street who recorded it.
Correct. You got it.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Have you run into anything with AI generated imagery?
Yes. AI is a problem. Now, when I say a problem, I'm not anti-technology. But let me just put on the table. And Dr. Gaiman, if you've gone to any of his sessions on this last year and this year, has really studied this in great detail. About 50% of what is online in the future won't be true. Okay, I mean, remember the old days where you said, you know, have a memory, but if you really want to remember it, take a picture? Those days are gone. We can fake pictures, we can fake videos. Dr. Gaiman, Sunday we did a panel, and he took an article he wrote on Hosea, just a theological article. Ran it through Google AI, created a podcast, and two digitally created, a male and a female, and you would think they're human. If you listen real carefully, you can hear some oddity, but very, hi, today we're going to talk about a brand new article that's hit the press on Hosea. And the lady comes in and is like, oh, is he the one that had the goofy marriage and all that? And the guy laughs, and they banter back and forth. They talk over each other a little bit. I mean, it's like it's taking Dr. Gaiman's content, his Book of Hosea article, and literally creating a fake podcast that can be as long as you want it to be, talking about all your concepts. And the people aren't real. Okay, let me go scammy. Grandma, I need money. I'm in Europe, and I've lost everything. Can you send me $1,000? And here's where you need to wire it right now, Grandma. While I'm on the phone, please, Grandma, I can't call my folks yet. I need to talk just to you. And yeah, but I need to verify something. Well, you know my dog, Bluefoo. Oh, okay. Well, if you know the dog, okay. Completely computer fraud, running out of Africa. They go on the Facebook, they go on the social media, they pick up enough information. They can articulate voices off the videos. So what I'm sharing with you, okay, how many rejoice God gave us a book, not a video? Because we're now in a world where a lot of things can be manipulated and changed. And so, and by the way, you say, well, for the gospel, think about what we could do. There's a lot of power in AI. But how many understand now evildoers have that same power? In a very sad, disgusting sort of way, The pornographers adore it because they don't even need people anymore. It's just the perversity of the mind. They can create all the artificial, anything they want. Used to have a little money, a little know-how to run a anti-God website. Now I don't understand anybody that just hates can get on there and create stuff and generate stuff, and it's all now. So it's very empowering for the people that are adopting it, and it can be used for evil. So be careful, because there will be people that will do deep fakes on you. You'll have photos, sermons, things that you didn't do. Final question. You're it, ma'am.
Thank you. So if you have a volunteer and they're creating an image or a drawing or a design or something for the church's website, for example.
Yes.
And they're volunteering to do that. That final piece of art that that person created, does it belong to the church or to you? To the individual?
Great question, and I'm going to repeat it because it just for somebody draws something for you and you're going to use it at the church. Is it yours or is it theirs? And the question is, it depends. Okay, it really depends on what the deal is. So if this person says, I'm a professional artist, I draw things, I sell them, but I'll let you use them, then you have a license to use their material. If they're like, look, I just enjoy this, I don't care, you can have it. Then say, well, why don't we then copyright this in the name of the church so it can be used in perpetuity? Then the church owns it. It's actually kind of a volunteer for hire, if you will. The church then has the content. Let me go a little further. Sermons. Does the pastor own it? Does the church own it? You fire the pastor, okay? And the pastor says, well, that's fine, but you got 2 years of my sermons online. I want them taken down tomorrow and delivered to me because I own those. Now, again, you hate to see these situations. You like things to be friendly. But I often encourage people to think about, you know, who owns the content, whether it's music, somebody writes a song for the choir. Is that owned, you know, Hillsong out in Australia had a lot of songs kind of written through a church. Well, those were owned by that church, not by different individuals. But if an individual writes a song and you're using it, then they have the right to take it away. So all I'm sharing with you is kind of upfront when you're generating content, similar to the website, similar to the Facebook group, similar to other things, decide who owns it up front and make it clear. And in the beginning, I often say, just say, hey, why don't we let the church have it? Then it'll go on in perpetuity. Then you've clarified it right up front. Does that address your question?
Yeah.
Very good. Yes, ma'am.
I have a case I use for ministry Telegram, and I quit using WhatsApp for a while because one of our volunteers in Dominican Republic in a group did a comment about a boxing competition that was a man beating a lady.
Wow.
And suddenly his account was closed. And I
kind of
tell all the people that work with us in different countries, not, if there is something, just at least use Telegram, you know, incognito, that's the way, because I know they are listening everything, and we share children things for orphanage, and, you know, and I just saw they are listening, Messenger are listening.
How confidential is your communication?
Now, which one? Because I heard about Signal for churches. Do you have any suggestion which one will be the less compromised?
I'm going to answer that I personally don't know. Okay, so I'm going to be transparent. But I will say there are varying levels of security. Okay.
Signal.
Is Signal good?
Okay. Signal's good.
Okay, so Signal is recommended. But I'm just sharing with you, be careful. It never goes away. You say, well, I deleted it. Facebook still has it. Now, they may not show it to anybody, but if ordered by a court, they can pull it up off their servers. In court, they can pull up every search you have done on your computer. And you go, well, that might be embarrassing because some of the stuff I searched, I didn't really think it. I'm just telling you, there is a record out there. You're leaving more of a digital footprint than you realize. And so, and again, for testimony's sake, how many believe we ought to be, hey, take my computer. That's me, you can look at it. But how many also understand in today's world, a lot of people project that they're more spiritual than they actually are. It is sad to me the number of child porn cases and immorality that we're finding on church computers. not just secular computers. So again, policies, procedures, the NCLL High Speed, we're a ministry to churches. Just talked with this brother. We help them update their bylaws. We partner with you. We serve you. If we could be of any blessing or help to anybody here, ncll.org. You can find information in the book and other things to reach out. But we are honored to stand with you. Thank you for what you're doing. And the final word, the hope of America is not the courthouse, the state house, or the White House. How many believe it is the church house? So I salute you on what you're doing. Blessings. Have a great rest of your conference.
Thanks for listening to this session from the 2024 Shepherd's 360 Church Leaders Conference. This material is copyrighted and may not be altered or sold. For information, please visit shepherds360.org.